Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
And this is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Go.
Thank you, Margaret. I don't know whether we'll use that or not.
Well, it was live, so you'll have to use it.
No, I know that, but I just, whether we'll actually have you do the announcing. But nonetheless, welcome to the show. That was Margaret Gray. Bud, how are you doing?
Doing pretty good, Mr. Henry. I hope you had a safe trip and everything.
Yeah, you have a safe trip back? I did have a safe trip back. Thank you, Robert Leonard, with us as well. Was in San Francisco over the weekend, and as somebody very smartly, insolently, but funny, said on the Facebook page, "Phil, the game's in Atlanta." Ha, ha, ha. And I said, geez, that's terrible. The game's in Atlanta. Oh, wait a second. I don't care. Kind of a spin on...
The Ricky Gervais.
Yeah, Ricky Gervais's I don't give an F. But anyway, I wasn't going to San Francisco for the game. I was going to San Francisco for the friendship, for the camaraderie, for the fraternity, for the folks that I know there. And that's what I did. I had a blast, had a lot to eat, had a lot to drink. In fact, had too much to eat and too much to drink, and I feel like warmed over, like the old song by the Village Fugs, I feel like homemade S-H.
You're not going to say it.
No, I'm not going to say it. Anyway, welcome to the show. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. And we're online, more importantly, at philhendryshow.com. You can get a backstage pass and watch the live streaming video of our show right now, which is going. We've got a website that within the next 48 hours, will become anew, a brand new look, and with it, live streaming for Apple products, iPhone and iPad. That will be within 48 hours at the outside. I know I'm quoting a time frame here, and I promised my pre-show subscribers that I wouldn't do that, but they know, the people that were watching the pre-show, what I really mean, and that most likely I'm lying right now.
Well, are you lying?
Oh, I'm not lying. I'm kidding. I'm not lying. I'm giving you the outside, because that's at the very, very outside, 48 hours. So what can I tell you? Isn't this the part of the show where a guy is supposed to...
Yeah, well, this part, if you went out, you're supposed to start off... Well, here, let me tell people.
You're supposed to get off the phone.
It's not the phone, it's a microphone.
God, man. You don't have a microphone? I meant to say microphone. What are you doing, bud?
I'm talking to people.
You can talk to them there, man. You don't have to. That's why I got this mic backed off of you guys. You don't know how to use it.
But if I get
away from the microphone. What?
This is where you say, hello, everybody. I'm Phil Hendry, and here's what I did on the weekend. A very interesting thing happened as I,
Right, okay, fine. Hi, everybody, I'm Phil Hendry. Here's what happened to me over the weekend. Nothing.
Well, something, but...
Yeah, we had a lot to drink and eat and stuff like that. The only thing that happened of any interest for me wasn't even really interest. It was just I had a conference call. I was trying to do a business call as I was driving home. But by the way, for those of you that drive in California and have lived here for a long time, there's one route, there's two routes north-south that have traditionally been the way most people go between Los Angeles and San Francisco. One is Interstate 5, which goes up the guts of the San Joaquin Valley, and then it comes into the Bay Area from, pardon the expression, the back door. And anyway, it comes in from the east, and then you swing west. You go over the Altamont, remember the Altamont?
The Altamont phase. That the...
Go back, back, and look up the name?
I guess. Anyway, it goes over the Altamont and then through the east side, the East Bay, Oakland, etc., and then you go across the bridge. Then there is the older traditional route of 101. That goes up through Ventura County, kind of follows a more coastal route, heads up through Salinas, towns like that, King City, goes up through San Jose, and it goes up the peninsula, and then into downtown San Francisco. Now, that's the way that I took. Most people would say, are you crazy? That takes for... Oh, it used to take a long time. It doesn't anymore. Because...
Well, they stopped... They built it through, I know, in Santa Barbara. The lights aren't there.
Right. So, in other words, 101 used to be part freeway, and at times it was part city street. It depended upon where you were. It used to be something that would hit stoplights in Santa Barbara, it hit stoplights in San Luis Obispo, then it would open up the freeway again, then it would hit stoplights, and it was a stop and start kind of a journey, and you didn't want to take it, and so, you know, to hell with that. But that doesn't exist any longer, and now it takes just about the same amount of time, if not maybe even a little bit less, because I hate to say this, but I don't exactly observe the speed limit as I should.
What does that mean?
What do you mean, what does it mean?
What does it mean? You're not going too fast?
Are you breaking the speed limit?
Yes, I am.
Well, is that something you want to say?
What am I going to get arrested now all of a sudden?
Well, it's not good on a listener. Bad influence.
Yeah, but a lot of people do break a speed limit, but for you to say it...
For me to say what? They're going to go out and break the speed limit now that I said that?
It's a double standard, Phil. It's a hypocrisy that I think at this particular time in the media, especially in talk radio, that has... We've seen so much disappointment on the part of so many hosts to live up to a standard of decency. And now here you are.
Lying about how fast I go on a freeway.
Yes.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
All right, well, yes, I break the speed limit.
By how much?
What is this? All of a sudden some...
Phil, we need to know how much.
What are you talking about?
What's the speed limit of San Joaquin? How fast you go?
It's 65 miles an hour.
And how fast were you going?
90.
Oh, my...
Jesus.
Oh, will you give me a break?
I gotta call Mr. Hall now.
What do you mean you gotta... What? Wait, hold up. Before you call... What is this, anyway?
Phil, right now, there is a crisis in the media. We've got too many of these reprobate and unprincipled and unmoral hosts, especially in talk radio and sports radio. And you come along here and...
Yes.
Oh, get out of here. If you think for 1 minute I'm buying it, you guys are upset that I'm doing... I went 90 miles an hour, okay?
And you're willing to live with that?
You will sign an affidavit to that effect.
Sign an affidavit?
Will you or will you not?
Yeah, sure, I'll sign an affidavit to that effect. Where's this going?
In your employment file, in the personnel file.
Get out of here! This has got to be a joke.
Do I look like I'm joking?
Yeah, sort of. And it ain't even April yet. It's going to go into my personnel file that I went 90 on the freeway. I love that. Well, you know what? I'm not buying it, so that's just all there is to that. I went 90, and there were times that I might even have gone faster than 90, maybe even 95.
Were you passing people going the wrong... In other words, were you in the wrong way lane?
You never mind about all the questions, please. I was... Look, when you get out on the open highway and there's some jackass crawling in front of you, yeah, I went around him and I went fast. Okay? And one of the reasons why I did it is I didn't... You know, I wanted to get home. I didn't want to spend all bloody day out on the freeways of the Golden State, man. So I just got, you know, I got on it. And I got from San Francisco. I left at 10 a.m. yesterday morning, and I got home at 11 a.m.
What?
I'm kidding. No, I didn't.
No, man, that like speed of light.
No, that's not the speed of light, but that's pretty... Well, that's 300 miles an hour. No, I got home at 3:30. So that's 5.5 hours. It's not that fast.
That should be a trip that takes at least 7 hours.
No, not on the new 101. Are you listening to what I'm saying? On the 101 now, with all of the lights gone, it's a 6-hour trip easy. It used to be 8 hours on that bloody thing. That's why nobody wanted to go on that freeway. 5.5 hours, okay? And I got to tell you, you know, there were times, not many, but there were times that I almost ran afoul of the man they call the Smokey.
What? The bear?
No. It's trucker term for highway patrol.
Oh, the state trooper.
You mean a state patrol?
Or the highway patrol?
Yes, thank you. Almost ran afoul of those guys. California Highway Patrol, I'm sure they're much like all the other so-called, you know, state troopers or state police. They don't play. The sheriff, the city cop, he may give you a little leeway because who knows, he may see you again. You know, we all live in the same town. Hey, how you doing, Mr. Henry? And there's Officer So-and-so. This, that. Highway Patrol, they don't care. They're never going to see your ass again. They'll drop a freaking ticket on you so fast you won't believe it. Speeding, it doesn't make any difference.
Well, you had the ticket on that. I can't believe you did that. Taking a picture while...
Whoa. Didn't you tell me that you do that?
I'm a journalist.
What difference does it make?
What, did you hear this? What difference? I happen to be a journalist, Phil. If I see something that's newsworthy...
You said newsworthy.
So what?
She misspoke.
What a petty, lopsided head. If I see something that's newsworthy, I'll take a picture of it.
So, like you told me 2 weeks ago, that you took a picture of something with both hands, okay, on the camera.
Yes.
Should I tell people?
If you don't make it sound filthy. No, I'll tell it. I took a picture, ladies and gentlemen, using both hands on my camera, on my iPhone, of the inside of my pantyhose. They had split. And these were brand new pantyhose by a major brand. I had just purchased them. So I had the phone down between...
Can I finish?
Well...
Hold on. She had the phone down between her legs, taking a picture. Okay? With no hands on the wheel. The highway patrol pulls her over and asked Frank, right?
Yes.
And Frank had to come clean and said, yes, officer, he was taking a picture between his legs. And what did...
Well, the Frank has the gender confusion, and so they thought Frank was drunk. But even though they thought he was drunk, they thought I was so far gone, they asked Frank to drive.
Because you were taking a picture of... We're going to take a break here, folks, on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
You're not just going to let it sit there, are you?
Margaret, what do you want me to say? You had a camera down between your legs. You took a picture as your husband said, yeah, he was taking a picture. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show. More on the Manti Te'o story. More on the Manti Te'o story.
Okay, just, truth. Never mind. It's more on that bitch. Story.
Never mind.
The Phil Hendry Show.
It's a bitch, man.
It's a bitch. Just more on that story. Just more and more and more.
Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back to the world famous Phil Hendry Show. Frank Gray joining us. You wanted to talk to Frank, right?
Yes, I did. Frank.
Hold on. I just want to let people know it's the Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL. We have Frank Gray, Margaret's husband, on the line. We wanted to talk to him about this whole idea that I was speeding. I came back from San Francisco yesterday. I was doing 90. I'm not proud of this. I didn't know I had to sign an affidavit to be given to Mr. Hall to prove that I'm somehow a rapscallion or a scofflaw, given the fact that most talk show hosts in his mind and in the minds of many today, most talk show hosts are moral reprobates, are lower than low, are no better than child molesters. When did this all start anyway?
All I know is what David asked. He said he doesn't want any more hosts associated with this company with the kind of reprehensible, disgusting, and unprincipled reputations that a lot of you people have now, you know.
You people.
Yeah, it's not like, I'm not saying you're black, so don't be offended by it.
Not talking about being black, man.
Yeah, but some people be offended by it.
Yeah, you would. All right, hold on. Frank, how you doing?
Hey, I'm better than Custergut, man. How are you?
I'm good. Have you heard about this?
Have I heard about what?
Have you heard about talk show hosts being held to such a... the talk show hosts are being looked at askance or askew, radio hosts, for having low morals that they're having to, I don't know, sign affidavits?
Well, you know, there's a morals clause in most of the contracts, but I have seen, and I think most of us have seen in the news and elsewhere, that some of these hosts... maybe not yourself, Phil, but some of them are, you know, involved in drug abuse and sex with an underage girl, and it's not good. I think the talk radio game is up, and they're gonna.
Frank, stay close to the phone, dear.
I'm sorry. What did he say?
He said, "Stay close to the phone."
Oh, okay.
All right. Margaret tells me that you were in the car. When was this, Margaret?
It was in December. It was before Christmas.
Oh. the famous pantyhose episode. Is that the one?
Yes.
All right. Well, okay. So what happened?
Well, what happened was he gets pulled over because of He didn't have both hands on the wheel. He was taking a picture of his pantyhose because the crotch split on them.
Well, it wasn't the crotch. It wasn't as if I was trying to get a shot. It wasn't like I was trying to get some early morning dew, okay?
I understand it, but the fact of the matter remains, okay? He's there with a camera, Phil, and he's got the thing stuck right between his legs, trying to get a shot right up the old, you know, trying to get one, get a shot right up Main Street. And,
oh, God.
And what do you mean, oh, God?
I was trying to get a picture of the split in the pantyhose.
All right, okay. But the fact of the matter remains that when the cop walked up to the window, and I'll tell you, she was a big 6'5", and I asked her, I said, you play football? She said, yeah, as a matter of fact, I do, or I did. And she was a big, big beast, a big, big, tough-looking dude. And she says to Margaret, how come you were getting a shot of your Royal American or something like that?
No, the cop didn't say that.
Well, something along those lines, didn't she?
The police officer said, were you holding that trying to get some kind of a cheesecake on yourself? And I said, are you listening to yourself, officer? Why would I do that? Because I saw you do that. Now, how he could see that, I don't know.
That's a good question. How could he see that?
Well, I think she was, apparently, he was fumbling with the camera when she walked up to the window. And she said, are you trying to get a shot up Main Street, yes or no? And I had to laugh.
Did you see she had a shot up Main Street?
Yeah, I did. But you're trying to get a shot up Main Street. And she said, it looks like you're trying to get a shot up Main Street. And someone parked a truck in front of the... And,
well, it wasn't funny to me.
No, I understand that. So in any event, so this cop says, all right, everybody out. Get out, you know. And so we had to get out. She breathalyzed us both and said, well, you know, neither you nor him are drunk, but I'm going to have you drive because even though you've been referring to me in the wrong gender, this is what he's saying to me. I don't know what he's talking about.
Ooh, Margaret?
Yeah. Margaret's saying to me, even though you've been referring to her in the wrong gender, I should say, because now you're talking about Margaret, right?
Who was talking to you?
The cop was talking to me about Margaret and said, even though you're referring to him in the wrong gender...
Yeah, okay.
What's wrong with you people?
Frank, it's difficult to understand you at times because of this gender confusion.
I don't know what you're talking about, okay?
All right, so anyway, the cop made you drive.
Yes, the cop asked me to drive, and I said, all right, officer. And she handed me my license back. She gave Margaret his license back, and she got into her car, and I said to her, I said, who'd you play for? And she said, New Mexico. And I said, well, geez, that's fantastic. And I said, what did you play? And she said, tight end. And I said, ha, ha, ha. And he, and Margaret, well, he went, you know, what's that supposed to mean? You know, is she queer? And
Okay, anyway, Frank, thank you very much. I just wanted to get this cleared up. So Margaret was trying to take a picture of her pantyhose, and it looked like she was...
Yeah, it looked like he was trying to get a picture of right up, you know, right up the alleyway, right up into the bullseye into the cavity of creation, and into the...
All right, so I had to...
You're hanging up on my husband.
Yes, I am, Margaret, because I can't keep listening to that babbling. I got to get moving, okay? I got to get moving and grooving. So what we have here is you telling me all about my reprobate ways, and you're getting a picture, not that you're getting a picture of anything wrong, you're taking a picture of your split pantyhose, but you're driving with no hands on your on the wheel, okay?
No hands on my what?
Get hands on her what?
Huh?
You said she didn't have no hands on her.
Phil, I'm going to quit or I'm going to kill. It's one of those two.
Bud, you had no hands on your wheel.
And what do you mean by my wheel? That's what I'm trying to get at.
The wheel of the car!
Yeah, she thought you meant a sex organ.
What did you say?
Well, isn't that what you meant?
Yes, but I don't need you telling me.
Are you trying to tell me that you thought I was saying that you had both? Hey, you didn't have both?
I want to be clear that what you're talking about is not something that is prurient or that is going to get me into even deeper trouble with the audience. Now...
we're going to take a break. We're going to be right back with Manti Te'o and not Margaret's having both hands on the wheel of the car.
All right, as long as you're not saying sex organ.
That's what I said.
I don't want you saying it. I want to say it.
You're sorry. If he said you had both hands on your sex organ.
All right, that does it.
Hey, oh!
Get out of here. We'll be right back. Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry. This is the world famous Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL. We have Grady Fisher on the line with us, who is a reporter for Fisher in Brief. It's a independent news organization that is edited by Grady himself and has been, it's one of the independent news operations we hear so much about. One of them being, smaller than the larger news operations, one of them being Deadspin. And Deadspin was the website that first reported on the Manti Te'o girlfriend story, whether the girlfriend being a hoax. Grady is on the line with us here from Los Angeles. And Grady, I wanted to ask you about this story being in relatively in the same kind of work that these guys at Deadspin are in, which is, you know, trying to scoop the big guys. There was an article in the New York Times about how Deadspin got it and ESPN didn't. This story. Do you have any comment on that?
Well, yes, I have a comment, and my comment would be simply this, Bill, that the New York Times should spend more time on reporting the news and less time on criticizing the opposing news organization. ESPN is going to do what ESPN does. ESPN, in my opinion, has not been worth its own weight in you name it, in raccoon drop-ins or manure or what have you for a long time. I think ESPN is wonderful at reporting what we already know, and I think they're good at reporting scores, and I think they're good at reporting that, but I don't think they're good at reporting news that has not yet broke, and they just never have been. The New York Times taking a pot shot at ESPN, I think, is low, and I think is kind of irrelevant, because New York Times, ESPN has never been worth a pinch of coon, you know what, like as I said, you know, and neither is the New York Times, for that matter.
All right, so it's just it's a family fight in journalism.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with the average listener or viewer or reader of news. They don't care whether ESPN had a story, Deadspin had a story, or Grady and Brief had a story. I had the story at the same time Deadspin had it, but I'll go one further for you. Manti Te'o is lying. He knew all about this.
All right, now you know this for a fact.
I know for a fact that Manti Te'o is lying, and he knew all about this, and he's letting other people take the blame for it, starting with this Tuiasa Sopo young man, and moving on to other individuals that may later be identified.
Well, but I gotta interrupt you here for just a second, Grady. Do you know this for a fact?
I know what I feel I know. When you say I know it for a fact.
Great. Grady, it's Margaret Gray. I'm a journalist, and I know that we have to have, we have to cite sources. What is your source?
Yes, we do. My source is my feeling that he is a liar. And
so this is your opinion?
No, this is my absolute. There's a difference. Ms. Gray, I know that you're a reporter.
No, there is a difference, but you have to cite a source. If you say something is a fact, you must cite a corroborating source of some kind. You can't just say it's your opinion.
I am citing a corroborating source. I'm saying to you that this is, in my opinion, a fact based upon my source, and my source is me. All right.
Let me do it. Are you a newsman?
No, I'm not.
I'll take questions from either one of you. That's all right.
No, but let me do it. Phil's not a newsman. You can't be. How do you know what you're saying is true?
Did you ask me the question? Do I have a source?
Yes, and you said you are your source.
I am my source, and the reason why I'm saying that I am my source is because I am the source of my conviction. My conviction, you understand?
I have to jump in here.
Go ahead. God, you're not a newsman. You don't know what you're talking about.
I know I'm not a newsman, but I'm asked, Grady, your source...
In other words, I'm going to try and spell this out the best way that I can for your audience. Manti Te'o is in on this up to his neck. What is my source for this? My source, and I believe, and this is the truth, I'll print this tomorrow in the first edition of Grady and Brief. It is absolutely the truth, and my source for this information that Manti Te'o is a liar and is up to his neck in this hoax is me. Now, before you say anything, what do I have any connection to the story?
Yes.
And the answer is I do. I have a deep emotional connection to this story because he's a liar. You see?
That is not a source of news. That's not a source of information. That is your sense.
When you say you have a source...
I don't expect either one of you to understand. You call yourself a newswoman, Ms. Gray. If you're a newswoman...
I am a newswoman, and I know what a source is. That you are not a source.
I am a source. I am... Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
No, you're not. Not what Margaret's saying.
You're not a newsman at all. I think Ms. Gray pointed that out. So you don't belong in the conversation. I understand it's your program, but you don't belong in the conversation.
Yes, but I do belong in the conversation. You are not... Bud Dickman, go ahead.
Yeah, Mr. Sinclair is Bud Dickman.
Yes, sir.
If you're the source of the news that Manti Te'o, I forget it.
Yeah, can I ask one? Yeah, ask a question. Go ahead.
Who am I speaking with?
This is Robert Leonard, sir.
All right, sir.
Manti Te'o is a...
He's a liar.
No, I know that. I know you think a liar. But I forget.
All right.
Let me tell you, before anybody asks me any more questions, I want to tell you this, and I want to tell you this from the bottom of my heart. Manti Te'o has said so many things that don't add up. He has said so many things.
Yes, but that is...
Hold on for a minute. Please, please listen to me. Please, before you indict me for not having proper sourcing, before you indict me for saying things, he has said so many things that don't add up. He has said that he was talking about her in the first person as if she existed, even after he said that he found out she didn't exist. He said she existed and found out she didn't. He said that this all the way up to Notre Dame. He talked about meeting her. He never met her. And now you want me to believe, and you too, Mr. Henry, I guess, want me to believe that he spent hours on a phone falling asleep to a dial tone. And
well, I didn't ask you to believe that.
Well, no, I'm not asking that either.
Well, then why don't you believe my source?
Because you are not a source. You are the reporter.
But I'm telling you, I'm citing myself.
When you write the article for tomorrow,
yes.
When you say that Manti Te'o is a liar and he's in up to his neck in this hoax, you will cite who as your source?
I will say my source is it doesn't want to be named.
Well, you just named yourself here.
Yes, that's correct. But you asked me what I put in print.
All right. Well, why not just say in print?
I guess I could, now that I've said it here on... You know, I forgot that I said it. I get, tomorrow, when I do the article...
See, you don't even know. You're talking right straight through the crack in your...
The crack in what?
The crack in my what? The crack in my pipe? The crack in the ceiling of my house? Or the crack of my ass? Is that what you want to say? Because I know that's exactly what you want to say. If you want to say that I'm talking out of my ass, then say it like a woman. Stand up like a woman. Like a real woman in a skirt, and say it.
You're talking out of your ass.
All right, fine. I will accept that then.
All right. You're also sounding a little squirrely here, okay?
In what way?
You're saying you don't want to name the source. You will not name the source in the article. You already named yourself. So what are you going to say?
I will say that my source is me. I have it from a very credible source that Manti Te'o is a liar and is in up to his neck in this hoax. And my source, who is identified as me. All right, now, you can laugh if you want to.
That sounds like you're mentally deranged.
Yeah.
No. Please listen to me for a moment and stop talking, because I have something I want to say. I know this guy's a lying Polynesian. When I was in the service, and we had run aground on an atoll in Micronesia, and I gave the last $25 I had to a kid in a grass skirt to go get a can of gasoline for our minesweeper. And that's the last I saw this lying, grass skirt-wearing coconut head.
So, racial prejudice...
No, ma'am, it's not racial prejudice.
Well, yes, it is. You said Polynesian.
That's not racial prejudice.
Yes, it is racial prejudice. Yes, it is.
No, it is not. That's the same race. That's a white man. That's a white man.
I don't know what to say. I feel a little ashamed for you.
No, I think that's wrong, sir.
Why is that wrong? Now, you're black, right?
Yes, sir.
You tell me. I will take that credibility from you.
I think it's wrong to say a lion coconut head, because you don't know if he would have got, what do you call it? How do you know he didn't get swept out to sea by a rogue wave?
Are you nuts or something, a rogue wave? Comment on what the man said. Is he racism or not?
You're an idiot, man.
God, that guy that talks like he's talking through a hole in the top of his head, I can't deal with it.
I will tell you this much, Grady. You've rolled out an opinion here that is ridiculous. You're the source for your news story.
Because of the firm commitment I have in my opinion, if you don't want to believe me, you don't have to believe me. That's fine. But I'm telling you, as sure as God made green apples, and as sure as he made coconut milk, about as fattening as anything you've ever had in your life, that guy, the way he looks through his face, is crazier than a wharf rat.
Well, I think you are prejudiced based upon your experience with that minesweeper.
Grady Sinclair, what was it, the Navy?
It was in the Navy, yes, sir.
Well, you're a little too young for World War II, right?
I didn't say it was World War II, did I? I said our minesweeper ran aground. I gave a guy $25 for a can of gas. That's the last time I saw him.
All right, Grady, I thank you very much. Grady in Brief is his website and his news service. You can look for that online, Grady in Brief. And
well, first of all, you can't cite yourself as a source unless you had an interview with the principal and he said it to you. If he said, but then the principal would be the source.
Whose principal?
Principal as the person in the story.
Oh.
And so then you would say my source is Manti Te'o. But he's saying his source, that Manti Te'o is a liar, is him, because he's had experience with what he called a lion Polynesian.
No, he's a lion coconut head.
All right. So the racism of this guy is informing his point of view, and so no one's going to take him seriously.
Yeah, it's probably going to happen.
And that's the tragedy of Grady Sinclair. I've known him for years. He is a damn good reporter, a damn good reporter. But he lets a lot of these points of view slip in. And frankly, I also think that there's some kind of a mental problem there. I don't know that it has anything to do with what Frank has. But it might be an STD. I don't know.
Untreated.
No, he's completely cured. Of course it would be untreated.
All right. We'll be back with more on this story when we come back. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL. Manti Te'o's fake girlfriend, the woman in the photos, she now speaks out. She talked to Katie. No, she talked to the Today Show, excuse me. We'll find out what she had to say. She's real. And so is this Tui Asisopo guy, apparently. We'll talk about it in a moment. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
I want to thank you for having me on the program. Am I still on the air?
A little bit.
Well,
I'm...
and I
well, you brought it up during the break, Phil.
I know, but I don't have to talk about it now. I guess I do, now that you guys... I was just saying to the guys, I'd seen repeated over and over again. You probably have seen it many times. Maybe not, but there was a very famous story, a crime story back in the early 70s about a guy that killed his whole family, and then he went on the lam. He just split. They couldn't find him. A guy named John List. You may know the name. You may not. For those of you who are a bit younger, it might have come, appeared on your radar screen sometime in the late 80s when they caught the guy. So it took him almost 20 years, but they caught the guy. They caught him using the TV show America's Most Wanted, you know, John Walsh's show. But they also caught him using, at that point, what at that point was a little used tool for police officers, and that was the forensic creation of someone's age, someone's face. What do we look like years down the road? So they used a clay sculpture, and they got a guy who was familiar with this kind of thing, a guy who worked with police making these clay faces of and aging them. And they asked him, would you please do a sculpture of this guy that we're looking for, John List? What would he look like now?
Well, I've seen that picture.
Yeah, I think I've seen it, too.
Well, it's pretty famous. I mean, I think it's used as an example of an outstanding piece of forensic detail where this guy took pictures of John List and aged him. Because when they finally did catch this guy, John List, he looked exactly like this guy's clay sculpture. I mean, exactly. The dude had, you know, the guy had caught this guy perfect. But what was weird about this story, as I read about it, it's a very spooky, very, very creepy story. This guy, John List, came home one day and decided, probably he'd been planning for it, though, that he was too broke. He was up to his neck in hock. He couldn't afford anything. He had no job. He'd been going off to the train station every day and just sitting and reading the paper, pretending like he had a job so his wife wouldn't know he'd gotten fired. Right there, that's weird. That behavior is right there strange. Then he, would come home. Well, he finally decided the way to get out of all of this was to kill his whole family.
Yes, kill all the family and...
Yeah, I think he killed his mother, but he couldn't lay her out on the floor like he did the other ones because she was too fat, and he wasn't able to haul her down. He would have had to hire some equipment, probably. And then...
All right, bud, we get the idea. His mother was... He shot her in her room and left her up there.
Yeah, because he couldn't haul her down the stairs.
All right, because he couldn't haul her down the stairs. What do you mean, hire equipment?
You can go to U-Haul.
Yeah, that's right. Hi, I'm at U-Haul. I'm going to kill my whole family.
Well, you're not going to tell them you're going to kill your whole family.
All right, hey, U-Haul, do you have anything that I can pull a heavy weight?
Phil, you'd make a bad murderer. No man is going to call U-Haul and say, I need to pull a heavy weight out of a bedroom, down some stairs, and then lay it on a floor.
I wouldn't say that. In any event, he killed his whole family, laid them out side by side on the floor of some ballroom they had in this mansion. I guess at one time this guy List had bread, and killed his mother and left her in her bed. But the wife, John List killed his daughter, for instance, because he felt she was going to hell because she wanted to go out dancing and doing the things that a 16-year-old girl wants to do. He thought that meant she was going to hell, so kill her. Okay, great, fine. The son got killed because, well, you know, we're going to have to kill him because I can't leave him alive. The wife got killed because she had dementia from an untreated syphilis.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, here was a woman. She was in her late 40s. When he married her, John List married this woman. She'd been married before.
Oh, my God. And she had untreated syphilis.
Yeah. She had syphilis. Well, she got that from her first husband, some Navy guy. Now, I don't know whether John List knew this or not.
No wonder he shot her.
I don't think that was the case, bud.
But how do you know?
Because what are you going to do, wait 20 years? Probably what you'd do is get the marriage annulled or something. I don't think they found it out, though. I don't think he knew. I think she had it. It was untreated. And then by the time she was in her late 40s, she started, you know, walking, you know, into walls and stuff. And they say, oh, your wife has syphilis, probably got it 20 years ago, probably got it from the sailor she used to go out with. How does that make you feel, Mr. List? And he probably went, just great, went home, cleaned his gun.
That, you don't think that happened?
No, I don't, I'm telling you. I just, I think everything just kind of piled up on this guy, and he finally just, in one explosive decision, decided I'm just going to kill them all, and he did. And he split. And he left his car at the airport, all these interesting little touches. This is 1971, long before the forensic stuff they have today. He was gone, man. And I mean, he was gone for at least almost 20 years, I mean, well into the late 80s. And they finally caught him by way of this forensic sculpture made by this man. He's very famous. I forget his name. He's so famous, I don't know his name.
Yeah, and I notice you don't take the time to find out the man's name. And that, I think, is wrong, Phil. If you're going to point out the wonderful sculpture...
Easy, Margaret. Okay, yes. I'll find out what his name is. Anyway, they found him by the... And they put it on America's Most Wanted, and...
They caught him on America's Most Wanted. It's John Walsh.
Now we know, man. Yes, you're right, bud. And that's how they caught him. They found him in Virginia. He was working some gig, and the FBI walked in and said, "Are you John Walsh?" He goes, "Sure, if that'll keep me from being arrested." They said, "How about John List?" He said, "Yes, that's me too." And they said, "That'll get you arrested." And he went, "Ah, shoot!" Clicked his fingers, clicked his heels, did a little spin, and out he went, putting on his own handcuffs.
Oh my God!
I think you got dementia from the untreated syphilitis.
Hey, shut up, man. Easy. I just knocked my own headphones off. All right, we'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil.
Somebody fixed my headphones.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Henry.
World famous Phil Henry Show, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. Truth is our bitch. And this year, 2013, will mark a beginning, an entirely new phase, a revolutionary new phase in the Phil Henry saga, if you will, in the journey of Phil Henry. We will be presenting on stage a one-man show. I say one-man show. It basically will be presenting a theatrical version of me. And that will be happening this year, late spring, in a variety of venues all over our beautiful country and beyond. Well, I say beyond.
Well, are you planning on opening in London, or aren't you?
Margaret, come on.
Are you planning on opening in London, or aren't you? Frank and I will be there in July.
No. No, I'm not.
Jesus.
Well, you know, excuse me, but I'd rather just, you know, deal with the American market first.
Frank and I will be in London in July, and I think it would be nice if you were there in Oxford Circle, or whatever it's called. I forget the name of the street.
Well, that would be nice. You know, it would be nice if I didn't even do the shows, if they just gave me a whole bunch of money and I sat on my ass. But none of that's going to happen, okay? I don't know if I'm... London? I'd have no idea if that will ever... I'll be happy if I can make a living out of this good old U.S. of A. Nonetheless, Margaret, you'll be the first to know.
That's the boy. That's what I want to hear. I want the first news on that.
Great. All right, so that's happening this year, and within hours, when I say hours...
Yeah, 48 hours.
All right, within 48 hours, a brand new look to our website will be unveiled as well, and we will have live media, live streaming of our video cast, for instance, for you guys there on your iPhones via our good friends at Bright Cove. So we're having... So there's a lot of stuff going on. In the meantime, in the real world, Serena Williams went out of the Australian Open in a huge shock as injury derailed her hopes against Sloane Stephens in the quarterfinals. Serena Williams, everybody was talking about this. She got her ass handed to her. She got a brand new, what, bud?
Well, go say something about her ass.
Watch it.
Got her ass handed to her. I wish they'd hand it to me.
Shut up, man. Hey, watch it, will you? Wish they'd hand it to you. Well, I understand that, though. So, anyway...
But you encourage him?
Just hold on. So, anyway, Serena Williams went out of the Australian Open in a huge shock as injury derailed her hopes against Sloane Stephens, the quarterfinal, a 15-time Grand Slam champion. 15-time Grand Slam champion, man. Woo!
Yes, but that's not the Grand Slam, Grand Slam.
No, the Grand Slam... To win the Grand Slam, you gotta win all four events. Nowadays, we say you're a Grand Slam champion when you win a Grand Slam event. But you haven't won the Grand Slam. The Grand Slam in tennis is the U.S. Open, the French Open, the Australian Open, and Wimbledon. Okay?
That's the same thing, though.
The same thing as what?
You said the U.S. Open and Wimbledon.
No, Wimbledon's in England.
Well, I'm not what an idiot.
Oh.
Okay.
Why don't they call it the British Open?
Because they call it Wimbledon, man. I don't know why they don't call it the British Open. The Grand Slam in tennis.
Now, what is the Grand Slam in hockey?
Hockey?
Yeah.
No Grand Slam in hockey.
Yes. I'm sorry. Golf.
Golf. Hockey?
Well, it's the same thing, Phil.
Yeah, in a lot of ways.
No, it isn't. It's not even close. Why? Because they hit a thing with a stick?
Well, they hit a thing with a stick in baseball.
Yeah, they hit a thing with a stick in baseball.
No, they don't. They hit... Yes, it's a bat. I'm talking about how they do the stick.
They swing at it the same way in hockey.
No, they don't. The Grand Slam in golf is the PGA Championship, the British Open, the U.S. Open, and the Masters.
The U.S. Open and the Masters? That, I don't get it.
Why is it when I say this stuff, you guys don't get it?
Doesn't make any sense. You're saying they got two events?
There's two American events in the Grand Slam of golf, yes. There's the Masters, held in Georgia. There's the U.S. Open. And the other, there's three. It is kind of interesting that way, but golf, you know, even though golf, at the turn of the 20th century, golf was primarily something that was played, the great players were in the United Kingdom. It's become an American, America runs the game now. Every time we have a Ryder's Cup, it's America against the whole bloody world. So the fact is, three of them are American. The Masters, the U.S. Open, the British Open, and the PGA Championship.
Now, how do they roll out?
First, it's the Masters.
Then it's the U.S. Open.
No, then it's the British Open.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is. Or is it?
No, I think it's a. It's Wimbledon first, then the Masters.
Would you get out of here with Wimbledon?
No, I'm sorry. It's the Masters first. Then I think it is the U.S. Open.
Well, maybe you're right. I don't know. But then the British Open.
Well, that doesn't help me. Which is it?
Margaret, you'll have to look it up.
What about in golf? In tennis?
I don't know.
I do. U.S. Open. U.S. Open, then the Italian?
Okay, bud. Back off, okay?
Not Italian?
No, not Italian. It's the U.S. Open. It's the French. I don't know what the order of the thing is. I don't know. I have no idea. You'll have to look it up. In any event, one of the Grand Slam events, the Australian Open, that's a Grand Slam event. But to win a Grand Slam, and I don't know the last person, who was the last person to ever actually win all four?
Well, I could look, that's probably someone like Betty King or something like that.
Yeah, what about Betty King?
Who's Betty King?
The lesbian.
Billie Jean King.
Well, all right, was it her?
No, I don't think she won the Grand Slam. I don't think, I can't name the last person that won in the same calendar year, too, by the way. That's the way to legitimately win a Grand Slam. See, everybody wants to kind of fudge it, you know. Well, he did the same thing, you know. He won three events one year and won some. No. The way to win a Grand Slam legitimately is you win all four in the same calendar year, and I can't remember the last golfer or tennis player that did it. Maybe it's impossible now. Maybe it's just too difficult. I don't know. Nonetheless, this young lady, Sloane Stephens, 19, is on the verge of breaking the world's top 20, and she was playing in her first Grand Slam quarterfinal. She gave a good account of herself in the opening stages, but Williams looked to have seen off the impressive teenager when she reeled off five straight games from 3-3. However, Williams came into the match carrying an ankle injury, picked up in round one, and appeared to turn it once again in the second set. The 31-year-old shrieked in pain while rushing forward for a ball at 4-3 down, and the doctor was called at the next changeover, prompting Williams to head off court for a treatment. Regularly grimacing in pain between points, the five-time Australian Open champion was unable to serve or move at anything like 100%. Stephens took advantage to that level. She battled on, determined not to end a run that saw her win Wimbledon, the Olympics, and the U.S. Open in succession last year.
There, that's it. That's the Grand Slam.
No, it's not the Grand Slam.
Yeah, will you... Why are you saying that?
Because that ain't the Grand Slam, man. That's why I'm saying it.
You don't say, well, I wouldn't say, Mr. Ernie, you're not saying because she's black.
No, I'm not. Are you an idiot or something? That's not the Grand Slam. The Olympics, that's not the Grand Slam. The Wimbledon, the U.S. Open, French Open, Australian Open. That's it.
Well, it's not, first of all, it's not called the Wimbledon. That's, boy, is that retarded. Secondly, no, never mind.
Wimbledon, the U.S. Open, Australian Open, and the French Open.
Not the France Open.
You know, you guys are really starting to piss me off.
Phil, you're the one that likes to be precise. You're always talking about being precise.
Yeah.
Look it. You know, if I meant the French Open and I say the France Open, you guys are going to penalize me. You're going to say, oh, you didn't say that. That's how petty you are. You know full well I mean the French Open.
No, I don't. For instance, the Masters and the U.S. Open are different, are they not?
Yes.
All right. Then why couldn't you have the French Open and the France Open?
I don't know, but they don't have any such thing. They don't have any such thing. They have the French Open that I made the mistake of calling the France Open. All right?
Yeah, and what about Australia?
What about them?
You didn't say anything wrong about that.
What, do you think I said the Australia Open? The Australian Open. There, you feel better? It was the... I can't believe you guys.
You're the one that always talks about precision.
Yeah, Mr. Aaron, you want people to talk good.
I want them to talk good, yes. I want people to talk well. But it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to speak the King's English all the time. When you're trying to make a point and people know what it is that you're trying to say, why would you want to obfuscate, if you will, by all that other jazz? All right. Don't ask me what it means. Look it up. After resisting the pressure...
What's it start with?
An O. After resisting the pressure of three break points at 3-3 in the decider, Stevens could not stave off a fourth and slammed a forehand into the net, but Williams handed it back. Boom, ba-boom, back and forth. Finally, it was the younger player who was the stronger in the closing stages, and when facing two match points, a fading Williams could only find the net to the astonishment of Stevens as much as anyone else on Rod Laver Arena. The new star of women's tennis will take on defending champion and world number one Victoria Azarenka in the semifinals on Thursday. So there you go.
And that is a big event. Why?
That's the Australian Open. It's one of the Grand Slam. That's why they cover it. That's why they say it is a Grand Slam event. The only thing about that is that it's increasingly meaningless calling it a Grand Slam event when, in fact, no one has won a Grand Slam in a long time. I'm going to look it up. I'm going to find out here. We'll be right back. The world-famous Phil Henry Show. We come back. We will have for sure the name of somebody, anybody, who last won the Grand Slam in tennis and in golf. More on that Mante Teo story. Tom Brady, we got a lot of sports. Tom Brady is being investigated for a slide in the ball game against Baltimore, a slide that looked like a Ty Cobb slide, like he had the cleats up ready to spike somebody. World famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
Either. Who cares, bud? You listen to what I'm saying? All the last guy to win the Grand Slam. Welcome back, world famous Phil Henry Show here till 1 o'clock.
Very good.
Thank you. No, we're happy to be with you. Truth is our bitch. The last guy to win the Grand Slam in men's tennis was Rod Laver, 1969. He won all four events. That's what winning the Grand Slam is. Okay? And not only did he do it once, he did it twice. He won it in 69, and then he also did it in 62.
He won it in 1969, and then again in 1962.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, no, that's what you said.
You can't win it in 1969 and then again in 1962, because you'd have to go back in time.
Oh,
He won it in 1962, and then again in 1969.
Right, that's the way to say it.
Thank you. You'd have to go back in time. So there you go. Before that, it was 1958, Don Budge.
Really? Don Budge? I bet you he didn't budge that year, did he? Well, look at the stone faces, so that doesn't even...
No, it doesn't even rate a chortle.
I would think that you'd... Never mind.
No, Margaret, I'm not going to be polite enough to laugh at something that sucked.
How dare you?
Don Budge in 1958, and that was it. So only three guys have won the Grand Slam in tennis, and it all happened within a relatively short span there, about actually 10, 12 years. Don Budge in the United States in 58, and then an Australian twice, Rod Laver in 62 and 1969. A lot of guys came close. Mats Wielander, if you're going to pronounce it right, Margaret.
Well, are you doing the French?
No, that's nowhere near French. That's Mats Wielander.
Sounds almost like Dutch.
It's Swedish, or whatever the hell he was.
Whatever the hell he was. Boy, I bet you that makes him feel good.
I'm sorry, Mr. Wielander, if you're listening. I don't know what country you're from. I apologize. Sorry, I think it's Sweden. Mats Wielander almost did it in 1988. And I say almost because the Swedish flag was raised in each, as the championship flag, if you will, in each one of those events. But it was Stefan Edberg who won at Wimbledon, not Mats Wielander. Otherwise, it was a Grand Slam win for Sweden that year. And there are a couple of other moments like that. The United States, a couple of years where both Sampras and Andre Agassi were winners. So that's what that is.
How come not a lot of guys have done that, though?
No, not a lot of guys have done it. The question is, will it ever happen again? Can they ever do this again? It's an incredibly difficult feat. It hasn't happened in over 40 years. Will it happen again? Never say never, because, look, we didn't have a Triple Crown winner for over 20 years in horse racing. And did we ever really think that Roger Maris's record was going to be broken?
Well, not until we had steroids.
Right, not until we had well... That's a good point. I guess we could say that Maris hasn't, his record had, I don't know, but we sure as hell had a lot of guys popping that apple out of the yard in a 2-year span back there in the late 90s, now didn't we? We had that guy, what's his name? Who's the guy? McGuire and the other guy.
That guy from the Chicago Cubs.
Yeah, I forget the cat's name now, man. And he only cranked out about 66 homers, so it was pretty incredible that year. Whether it was steroid-related or not, I don't know. So that is a list of the tennis. Now, I was going to try to get over and give you a list of the golf Grand Slam guys, which I'll do at a later date. In terms of women, and we have Grand Slam and tennis. Do they have the female?
I got right here.
Get the list of the women. Here it is. Women's singles champions. The last woman to win the Grand Slam was Steffi Graf, and that was in 1988. And as a matter of fact, and then before her was Margaret Court in 1970, and then before Margaret Court, it was Maureen Connolly of the United States in 1953, and that was that. So only three in the history of women's tennis, and more recently than in men's tennis, Steffi Graf. Who's the one that married, what's his name?
Who?
Wasn't there a woman, a tennis player that married, like, was it John McEnroe or something like that?
Well, I know that McEnroe married a big, tall, a real butch.
A butch?
Well.
Somebody like that. But anyway, it might have been Steffi Graf. Margaret Court is famous because she's the one that guy, Bobby, what's his face? Bobby Riggs. He said that women sucked at tennis or they weren't any good or something like that.
Yeah, he said that a woman couldn't beat a man.
Yeah, some kind of jive-ass thing like that. So Bobby Riggs went out and he played Margaret Court and he beat her. Margaret Court had just won the Grand Slam of tennis. And here comes Bobby Riggs, who was 20 years older than her. And in this sort of, I guess you could say it was an exhibition, a carnival-style exhibition, of the battle of the sexes, so to speak, went out and handed a woman's Grand Slam winner a loss in this exhibit of supposed men's superiority. Billie Jean King, I guess that didn't sit very well with her. I think she felt that Margaret Court was a little psyched out by the whole atmosphere. Who knows? But Billie Jean King went out there and took on this guy, Bobby Riggs, and beat him.
Oh, so she's a lady and beat him?
Yeah, but she said she was a lesbian.
Yes, see, that's
what?
Well, nothing.
She's a lesbian, so what does that mean? So, like a half a man or something like that?
I didn't say half a man.
In any event, she beat Bobby Riggs, and that was that. So I guess that sort of put him in his place, and I don't think we've had any kind of nonsense like that ever since. I think the whole thing is I think that was such a vestige of the 70s and the late 60s when this battle of the sexes thing was happening. There was even an event that was tragic. It was a match race, a battle of the sexes, so to speak, between a male horse and a filly. I forget the name of the male horse. The filly was a beautiful animal named Ruffian, a three-year-old, I think. Ruffian was the female, and it might have been Swaps. I don't know why I'm thinking Swaps, but in any event, this was staged by some jackass. Now, if you're in PETA and you wanted to protest something, here's something to protest. This was asinine. There's no reason for this, you know, a battle of the sexes. What the hell is that about? And you're taking a horse and an animal that's used to running in a pack, in a pack of, say, five, six, seven, eight more horses, and you're putting that horse against just one other horse. And they run differently than they do in a pack of horses. They're trying to keep up. They're trying to match a certain pace, match a certain speed. And if there isn't, you know, if there's just one animal, the other animal tends to, in the case of Ruffian, it tended to go a little harder than it should have in that instance. And Ruffian wound up breaking a bone in her foreleg, one of her forelegs, and had to be put down on the track. And why? Because of some stupid idea of a battle of the sexes race?
That is, I didn't know that.
I'll look that one up too. We'll be back. World famous Phil Henry Show.
How do you know she existed?
What?
Well.
Phil Hendry.
You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here to the world famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL. I'm telling you,
Well, what you just said.
I'm not kidding you. I'm not kidding. I'm not exaggerating at all.
Go ahead and tell the audience that, then.
I'm fine with the audience. I'll tell the audience. The last 15 years of my life, you can take the last 15 years of my life and drop it right into the crapper. It makes no difference, man.
So, in other words, the last 15 years of your life had been like a big brick of crap.
Yes.
A big kilo of dung.
Yes.
Man,
I'm telling you. For all that I've done with the last 15 years of my life, now I'm not saying I haven't learned anything, so I suppose in a way it's better than a kilo of dung.
That's what you called it. You said a brick. And in my day, a brick was a kilo.
Well, what are you talking about?
When you were dealing... Well, I've been...
Oh, look at you. When you were dealing what?
I said you, not me.
I didn't deal anything, thank you very much.
What are you talking about, Mr. Henry?
She's talking about weed.
No, I am not.
Nonetheless, that's exactly what I said. That's exactly what I said. But the thing of it is you can't look at your life and say, well, all right, if the last 15 years of my life has been nothing more than one solid brick of horse dung, let's say, there's got to be some upside to that.
Well, even horse dung, if you're talking about a brick of it, could be used as fuel.
Yeah, you could use that as a brick of fuel if you needed it. What's so funny?
Yeah, you're right, you could. It's not exactly like peat moss or whatever that stuff is. But I'm just telling you, man, I mean, we've had, in the last few days, I went to San Francisco, I took a couple of days off. I went up to visit some friends, watch the ball game. Had a couple of bites to eat, had a couple of belts, that's right. I even went off of my usual tequila regimen and had a couple of shots of Bushmills. Now what do you think of me, huh?
Boy, that's pretty unusual for you, Mr. Henry.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe it is. But you know what? I didn't care. No, it was a lot of fun. Went across the street from the hotel into John's Grill, one of the great old eateries in San Francisco, a place where Dashiell Hammett may have written parts of The Maltese Falcon. Had a couple of pops in there. And so on and so forth. And then I got back to town yesterday, and it was, you know, work all over again. And I'm telling you, just one disaster after the next. There's nothing that's easy in this world, folks. And if when things are tough and things are, you know, piling up, you know, and you and you're thinking the way I'm thinking and you're feeling the way I'm feeling, which is like, oh, the last 10 years has been nothing but a dung, you know, a big brick of dung or whatever. Just remember, there's got to be some lesson you can pull away from this, man. There's got to be something you can learn, and you can, and you're better for it, you know.
Well, what is your lesson?
My lesson? You're not gonna believe what my lesson. People are gonna hate this because they're gonna think it goes against the whole, you know, lesson of life thing. My lesson has been I've been too generous with people, too generous.
Well, that goes all against the whole the Christian thing, the golden rule.
Yeah, it goes against the golden rule and everything.
Well, maybe it does and maybe it doesn't. Maybe it does and maybe it doesn't. I was far too generous, but here's the thing. I was generous in the way that most people, I think, are generous. I was looking for love.
In all the wrong places.
Yeah. You'd like the song?
Whatever, okay? I was looking like most people are generous, most people give, most people are nice, most people... Why? Because they want love. They want something in return. They want people... That's what I did all of my life. That's what I did all of my life. And it culminated in the experiences of the last 15 years. So when I say too generous, that's a bad way of putting it. I was generous for all the wrong reasons, you know?
Yeah, I like that song. Remember, goes looking for love, you know?
You knock it off, Bud, with the looking for love.
That's really not what that's... I know the song that Bud's... I was looking for love in all the wrong places is a country song. It's got nothing to do with what Phil is singing about. You're singing, or you're not Phil singing, but you're saying, Phil, that you were giving of yourself for the wrong reasons. So it was more like nights in white satin. Is it more like that? Never reaching the end.
Yeah.
Nights in white satin?
Yes. Never reaching the end.
Never reaching the end.
No, it's not like that.
What about this one? We trip a light fandango.
You knock it off with all of the classic hits of the great, you know. It ain't that song either. I'm just saying it was a situation where I, giving for all the wrong reasons. You want to do that. If you want to be generous for the reasons that we all should be generous. This person really needs that. Got nothing to do with me. Got nothing to do with me at all. You got to take your ego completely out of it and... Of course, I didn't do that. So, in order for me to counterbalance that somehow...
You're just going to be selfish.
Exactly. I'm going to be selfish. No, I'm not going to do that. I'm just, you know... I'm not going to be the... you know, I'm not going to be Big Daddy anymore, man. I was Big Daddy. No way, no way, no way, man. Because today, you know, as I look at my life now, today, things are just as difficult, if not more. So... Let that be a lesson. That's my lesson from me to you. Don't do it, man. Don't go out there doing for people because you think somebody's going to love you for it. It's not how the world works. And you would be better off, and it goes against all of our instinct, you would be better off being selfish and not giving to people because you don't really want to do it. You're only going to do it because you think it's going to send your ass to heaven. You might as well just not do it, man. You know.
Do you believe in heaven?
Do I believe in heaven? I have no idea. I don't know where I don't know. All right.
You don't know. You don't know if there's a heaven or not.
No, I don't know if there's a heaven or not.
Why not?
How am I going to know that?
Well, have you made a study of it?
How am I going to make a study of it, Bud?
Well, what Bud's saying is, do you believe... excuse me.
That's told not to do that.
I told you, Margaret, would you please not do that?
You know something? I had some of your Turkish coffee, and it cost gas. That's not on me. That's on you. That's not on me. That's on you. Your Turkish coffee caused gas.
So you had to belch right into the microphone.
Yeah. Well, where do you want me to do it, Phil? Am I going? People are going to hear it.
Yeah, you just put your mouth in. You're like, burr.
People will hear it. It doesn't matter if I cover it up.
All right. Authorities say the shooting at a Texas community college was the result. What?
Well, are you just blowing it off? Did you hear what I said?
I heard what you said, Margaret. I accept what you said. People are going to hear it, even if you try to cover it up.
It's like a fart. You can cover that up, but guess what? Within seconds, there's panic in the room.
Well,
nobody's asking your opinion, bud. It's like a fart.
Yes. You can cover it up.
But within seconds, the room's filled with panic.
Yes.
I accept what you say. Thank you very much.
That's all I'm asking. I'm asking for you to acknowledge, not to approve, but acknowledge.
I acknowledge what you just said. Interesting.
Which basically means I'm full of crap. So I wish you had not acknowledged.
Can I finish doing this now? Authorities say the shooting at a Texas community college was the result of an altercation between two people, and at least one was a student. Harris County Sheriff Major Armando Tello says both people involved in the altercation were wounded and hospitalized. He says a college maintenance man was injured in a crossfire and also taken to a hospital. Tello says a female who had a student ID was also hospitalized. So these are people with gunplay there, and it caused quite a bit of concern nationally. It was not the large massacre-style shooting that we are used to or that we were anticipating. It was, in point of fact, some kind of a disagreement between two people, but nonetheless, there are the guns. I'll tell you something, and it has been reflected in recent poll numbers. What happened in Connecticut has even made people who were traditional gun rights advocates, it's even made, and I'm one of them, it's even made us ask the question, you know, what are we going to do here, okay? Because I'm not going to keep on, every time something like that happens, I'm not going to keep on doing what I've always done, which is go to war against the gun control people. That's always what I do. Well, we had a shooting. Time for us to gear up and go to war against the gun control people, trying to protect the gun people. Better I'm going to put on my flak jacket and get and go to war for the, you know, on behalf of gun rights. And I'm getting a little tired of that because, you know, the question now is, while I'm going to war on behalf of gun rights, who's going to war on behalf of these little children that are getting killed? So what's happened is I think everybody has had the same thing, that, you know, has sort of the same realization that I had, which is, wait a minute, I've been sitting here fighting the fight for the NRA and gun owners, and there's little kids that are dead. And if you want my opinion, I would much rather be battling on their behalf than people whose rights are never going away. Newsmax, what do you do for a living over at Newsmax other than pretend you're a news gathering agency? And in point of fact, you're a right-wing fascist propaganda rag, Newsmax. Okay, and your question, is it time for federal legislation against gun? Let me say it again so even idiots like you get it. Your guns are never going to be taken away from you. They're never going to be taken away from you. Now, you may not be able to have 85 million guns stocked in a bunker someplace. It may be that you will not be allowed to have so many grenades and so many sticks of dynamite. They may actually limit the number of guns that you can own to, let's say, 100. And maybe, just maybe, the gun you have doesn't fire as many rounds in a minute as you'd like it to. And may, you know, these are all things that you may have to live with. But nonetheless, you're going to have plenty of firepower. You'll have enough to waste anybody that tries to bust down the door to your house. I guarantee it. I guarantee it. And the ammunition to go with it. But what's the big question that has not been answered? How do we keep a little five-year-old kid alive from one day to the next? How's that happen? Anybody got any bright ideas about that? You want to have guards at the schools. In other words, what you want to do is you want more bureaucracy. You want a larger government. You want a bigger police presence. I thought that's what most of you people that support the NRA and you people in the NRA, I thought that's what you were against. Now, you're going to have to start making some sense, okay? And when you do, you know, then I'll listen. And I haven't stopped fighting for gun rights. I haven't stopped being a gun rights advocate. I haven't stopped being in favor of the rights of gun owners. I'm completely in favor of it. But I'm, you know, the priority is now secondary to little kids trying to go to school at the age of five. You forgive me, but that's now my priority, not your ass, if you don't mind. If you don't think of me as some liberal, because I don't have you uppermost in my mind each and every day.
because I don't have your guns and your rights to guns uppermost there, number one, top of the list, every single day. I'm worried about your ass. I'm worried about a little kid. If that's all right with you, I still believe in gun rights. I do.
You're just going to get them pissed off at you and everything now.
They're going to think you're a liberal.
Well, of course they're going to think I'm a liberal. Because a liberal is a guy that doesn't have their ass uppermost in his mind every day as the end-all, be-all to his existence. If he, the gun owner, is secondary on any given day to the rights of a little five-year-old kid to go to school, suddenly I'm a liberal. That is the simple-minded bastard that some of those people are. Not all of them. Not all of them. But some of them are that stupid. Doesn't matter if I support gun rights. I have to support it above everything else. I have to support it even beyond the rights of little children. To live. To be alive. See? Otherwise, I'm just a bleeding heart liberal that wants a bigger government. And what are you jackasses asking for when you want more cops to guard schools? That sounds like bigger government to me.
Now you're all pissed off and you're not going to have a good show for the rest of the way. Not that you've already had a good show.
Well, thanks a lot, Margaret.
You're going to have an attitude and everything.
Maybe I will.
You'll probably want to get in a fight.
Maybe I do.
Can I go home early then?
No. All right, we'll be right back. I'm fine. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show. Sorry, I got angry.
Truth
well, it's not
is
me.
Our
You're
bitch.
Scaring everybody else.
The Phil Hendry Show.
Cause a problem. Newsmax is like WorldNet Daily.
Yeah, it's one of these. See, you know, these are news. I don't like any of these news sources that masquerade as a news source when they're a propaganda sheet. Newsmax is one. WorldNet Daily is another. And I'm sure there's the ones like the one on the left is that what's that watchdog? They call themselves a media watch. Media Matters.
Yeah, Media Matters. They're a media watchdog.
Bull crap. Not a media watchdog. I think they may be a media watch cat. They may be a media watch mouse.
All right, enough, Phil. The joke is going. This is a Tuesday. You just got back from a 3-day vacation. It's flat. Just flat. All right?
Fine.
Yeah, it's not about to happen, man.
Great. Okay, so nonetheless.
It's just news watchdog, and it's not a news watch. It's not a watchdog.
It's flat.
Yes.
Well, we could barely do that.
See, there he goes again with that lazy eye looking at me and going, it's flat.
We had a whole discussion about flat last week, so just take it easy. Anyway, Newsmax, yeah, America, what is it called? Media Matters. That's another one that's a load. People don't know the difference, though. And this Newsmax really pisses me off with this. They had a poll that says, are you ready to have Obama take your guns or some jazz like that? Well, what do you think people are going to say that read your newspaper or your news site, Newsmax? What the hell do you think they're going to? I guess it's going to come in about 99% no. And what are you going to do with that? You're going to publish that as, here's the result of our poll. It wasn't scientific, but just taking a feeling for the people here, just getting a little bit, just testing the water, so to speak. 99%. All right, anyway, I don't care. It's fine with me, but I mean, you know, you just got to know what it is that you're reading. So, that was that, and this is now. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show, our website is philhendryshow.com. We're located at, we're in West Palm Beach, right next door to Newsmax. No, our website is philhendryshow.com. Where we're located is anybody's guess.
We're in Westlake Village.
Westlake Village, that's our mailing address is Westlake Village. California, and our website, as I said, philhendryshow.com, where you can get a backstage pass and watch our live streaming video of the show, as well as listen to our archives that go back over a decade, 5,000 hours of archived audio shows and of radio shows. Such a huge archive of material that it took forever for us to migrate, that's the word that we use, migrate that material from the old website platform to the new one. I just, by the way, got a message from my website, guys. They're working through the night to get the new site up and running.
Yeah, well, when you got that message, you were very angry.
I was not very angry. I was not.
Yeah, you started talking about how much you regret ever being born.
Yeah. No, I didn't.
Well, you were...
No, I wasn't anything. I was saying that this has been a long process. It's been frustrating. More frustrating for the guys that have been actually doing it. Nonetheless, it's going to be fantastic. It'll be ready in a couple of days. You're going to love it. And we will have all of the capability that we have advertised, streaming for Apple product, et cetera, so on and so forth. So now's the time to get a backstage pass at philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com. Get one and become a part of our backstage pass family. All right, Tom Brady, during that ball game, I picked New England and the 49ers to be in the Super Bowl, but it was not to be. The New England Patriots, they suck. You know?
What do you mean they suck?
They suck. The New England Patriots suck. The New England Patriots have stiffed more ball games. I mean, you know, at least they've won three. I get that. They've won three Super Bowls. Am I right about that? Yeah. But the fact of the matter is they have choked more big games than you really want to think about. The Patriots, take a look at starting with that game they lost when they were almost undefeated that year against the New York Giants, and then they stink it out in the Super Bowl and lose to Eli Manning and the Giants. They lose again to Eli Manning and the Giants. Last year they lose to, who the hell they lose to last year? Yeah, it was Eli Manning and the, well, I don't know who they, yeah, it was to the Giants. And then this year they don't even make it into the Super Bowl. They lose to the Baltimore Ravens and on and on and on it goes. Now, I'm not saying that the New England Patriots are a bad team, but let's just hold off, if you don't mind, on giving Tom Brady greatest quarterback of all time awards just yet.
Well, you were having that argument with that one guy.
Yeah, you said if he would be.
No, I did not say that. No, I did not. No, I didn't. If being the greatest quarterback of all time means the number of Super Bowls you've won, well, then we've got a very easy answer to the problem. We've got Joe Montana and Terry Bradshaw. There, they've won four. Okay? Is that right? Montana won four? Yeah, Montana won four. And Bradshaw won four. There, is that good?
Well,
no, that's not good. No one is going to confuse. Then we get into this argument. Well, the players in the 70s were not near as fast, et cetera, et cetera. And that's also a valid point. Nor were they in the 80s. By that argument, then you have to eliminate all players, let's say before all players from 20 years ago on back. You have to eliminate all of them, and only current era players within the last 20 years, maybe not even that, within the last 15 years, those are the only ones that count. You want to do that?
Well, that means you don't know Joe Montana?
No Joe Montana, sorry. Joe Montana's out, can't... it's a stupid argument, okay? So, no, I don't think it's about Super Bowls won, and I don't think it's about, I don't think it's about only modern period quarterbacks. I think there's a little more discussion that goes into it. We'll be right back next hour. World famous Phil Hendry Show. Now time for a bathroom trip.
Phil Hendry.
Welcome back here, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, and truth is our bitch here, and I have taken to wearing my, you know, I'm wearing the glasses a lot more now, Margaret.
Well, I've noticed that, and you don't have any ego about that.
No, I mean, what am I going to do, you know? I could get some glasses that make me look less like some, like that little... I don't know if anybody remembers the little old one. It'll make me make me look less like some old man bent over, Pinocchio.
An old man bent over Pinocchio. God almighty.
Are you going to apologize for that?
Why?
Yeah, I know you're talking about Geppetto, but what you just said.
Boy, you got a filthy mind, you know.
Excuse me, you're the one that said an old man was bent over Pinocchio.
Yeah, what else are we going to think?
Gee, I don't know. Maybe you could think about Geppetto, the guy that was making Pinocchio.
What's he doing bending over him?
He was bending over him.
He was bending over him, why?
Margaret, you know what I'm talking about. See, now this is you. You're always complaining about these two.
No. I complain about them when their minds are reveling in the filth that you so readily want to feed them. The two of them are like two filth hogs, and their yaps are open for your filth. Now, Phil, when you do good, I point it out. You just said some old man was bending over Pinocchio, and one can only imagine those, whatever they were called, the lederhosen?
What?
The shorts they wore in that part of the world.
Yeah, lederhosen. Yeah.
Well, you can only imagine the lederhosen pushed all the way down to the ankles.
All right. Unbelievable that you guys would go there.
You're the one that went there with it.
I want to get on the line here, Dean Wheeler, because we were going to talk with Dean, actually. I don't know. We were going to get into something with Dean having to do with something else. I mean, we're so late coming on the air with Dean. It's crazy. I know he's in San Francisco again this evening with his wife, Emeralda. She's at the Cornucopia, which is in Oakland tonight. And congratulations again, Dean. Are you there, Dean?
Right, Phil. I'm right here.
Congratulations again on the success of your wife's engagement so far around the West Coast. Has she gone across the rest of the country yet?
Right now, Phil, what we're trying to do is just feel our way here. A few of these dates, kind of coming out dates for Emeralda. She's on stage tonight here at the Cornucopia, and we're going to just try to smooth out some of these rough edges before we take her out nationally.
What's the next stop?
Well, we're going to try, when we say nationally, we're edging our way eastward. So a next stop would logically be Vegas.
Oh, Vegas, that is big time.
Well, yeah, Margaret, thank you very much. But it's not going to be a big stage in Vegas. It'll probably be, before we hit Vegas, I've got some things I got to tighten up. I know you're tired of me talking about that horn player, but there he goes again with that sloppy horn play.
Yeah, I would say that every time you're on the air with us, you talk about how lousy that horn player is.
Well, there's a lot that I don't like about him. See, you see how he drowns her out?
I don't hear it.
You don't hear it. Do you, Phil?
No, I don't.
I think there's something going on between the two of them, too. That's the other thing.
See, you got to get that straightened out, man. You know...
What do I got to get straightened out? Go ahead. Tell me all about it, Phil. You know that this is a soft spot for me.
All right. Well, don't just hold on. You can't go out on a national tour with your wife's singing career when you're suspicious of her and the horn player.
And I just heard you go... Which was you stifling a laugh, right?
You're right, Mr. Wheeler. That's what he's... Well, I'm sorry.
Thanks a lot, bud.
Thank you, bud, for telling me. Thank you. No, why would you punish him?
Why do you have to... Why do you have to know everything, okay?
Did you just go... like you laughed? I heard you do it again.
No, I didn't. I'm trying to think of...
A good lie?
No, I'm not trying to think of a good lie. I just don't know why you're obsessing over this horn player.
Because the guy's got his hands all over her. That's why.
Dean.
Was that you, Margaret, or was that a version of Phil?
Dean, I'm sorry, it's Margaret. I'm trying to be gentle here.
Oh, don't be gentle. You know, you would think the two of you were two big, callous-ridden guys in a shower in the maximum security... Don't be gentle. Go ahead and just wait till the bull's gone and go.
You know, so much of this show is devoted to jail rape.
It really is.
That I just think we got to clean our act up here, okay?
I didn't say a thing. I wanted to say to Dean that, Dean, it's better that you just speak to your wife about this. Say to Emeralda that you're not comfortable.
Uh-huh. Go ahead.
Well, that you're not comfortable with her and her interests, shall we say, in the horn player.
Is there any other advice you have for me to make me sound even more like a wuss, like a poor gelded animal type?
Dean, don't do it, okay?
Don't do what?
You're pushing yourself even further into this hole of self-hate. Don't do that, all right? I mean, look... If you go to her and talk to her about this horn player...
Now, right here, hold on. This is our favorite song. Listen to this. She sings it like an angel. Listen to this. Dee, 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 dee. And that horn player, I'm telling you, the horn player. He's whispering it again. God.
Take it easy, man.
No, I don't like it. Hey! Never mind.
Dean.
Yeah, listen, she's trying to do the cutesy poo. You know why? Because the horn player likes that.
Well, whoever, why don't you fire him?
Why, what good is it going to do? If I fire him, then she'll just be bothering me to rehire him.
You really think they've got an affair?
A what?
Do you think they're having an affair?
No, I just think I don't like... See this whisper stuff? I think he's the guy that told her to whisper.
Tell her not to whisper, then.
I've told her not to whisper, but she can't hear me.
Why?
Because I'm whispering.
What?
Well, that's... During the song, she doesn't like me yelling at her.
Dean, it's Margaret again.
Really? Yeah?
Well, what's your problem?
I don't need any more advice on how I can go to my wife like I'm a eunuch, like I'm one of the court eunuchs, and, oh, please, Emeralda, would you please love me while you go off into a bed with a horn player?
I think you're making this into some... I think this is a self-loathing exercise. I think you're turning this into an exercise of self-loathing and punishment for something. I don't know what it is.
I told you I used to beat her.
I know all about that, man. You said you haven't hit a woman since you came out of jail. Is that right or not?
Yes, it's right.
Then quit it. Quit going back on that. God. I was going to tell... I don't know what... You know what? I'm going to let you go, man.
Yeah, thank you, because I got a horn player I'm going to shoot, I'll tell you that.
Don't talk that way. You're on the radio.
All right, well, if I said it in private, would that be better?
No, it wouldn't.
Dean, I think things can be worked out with her if you simply sit her down and say to her that I want to make this clear. I'm firing the horn player. If you want to go with him, you can. I'll get another singer. If you're staying here with me, that's good too, darling, because I love you. But either way, the horn player goes.
You think that'd work, huh?
I agree with that.
You do?
Yes.
That's what you have to do with a woman. You have to say, fine, dear. You do whatever you need to do. If your heart is with the horn player, then go. Go with the horn player. I'll carry on without you.
I'm going to carry on with who? I don't...
Find another singer.
Oh, but here's the guitar player, too. This guy thinks he's Wes Montgomery. God, I hate them.
All right, I'm going to go now.
Yeah, okay, sure.
I gotta go, man. I gotta take a break, okay? Just do what Margaret said, and you're gonna be fine.
Look, I just wanted to...
Well, that was cruel.
What'd you hang up on him for?
Gotta listen to this guy, man. I gotta go. I got things to do, people to see. Every time I talk to this guy, it's the same thing. I'm the horn player and my wife. He's still playing these small gigs. He wants to go out nationally with her, but he doesn't want to go out too far nationally because he's gotta solve this her and the horn player problem. The last time, I thought he already canned this guy.
I think he did. I think this is a new horn player.
Yeah, I think it's his brother.
Why?
Because he plays the same way as that other guy.
Yeah, I think it's like a twin brother.
Because he plays the same way as the other guy, you just think it's got to be a twin brother.
Yeah, I mean,
Well, that's a big mistake, Dean, if you're listening, man. Why would you fire a cat and then hire his twin brother? Because...
Well, what is so funny, Phil?
It's the idea that he'd fire a guy and hire his twin brother. I just think that's hysterical. Oh, my God. Dean and that horn player, man, I'm going to write a book. I swear to God, I'm going to write a book or I'll sell the rights to somebody, and I won't tell Dean that I did it. All about him, his wife, and the horn player. It's a beautiful thing. All right, coming back to Tom Brady's slide. There's sports news that we got to get to. Tom Brady... There's Rex Ryan getting into trouble for an automobile accident. And then there is news about Tebow. All of a sudden, Tebow, last year everybody loved him. Now he's like a disease that people talk about. Honest to God. Tim Tebow. More on that when we come back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
So the guy wasn't twin, so what?
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Tom Brady in the AFC Championship game against Baltimore in a particular play when he took off and ran with the ball. went into that quarterback slide that we're very familiar with. Quarterbacks go into that slide in order to protect the upper part of the body from taking a punishing hit that could injure and possibly injure a player seriously, possibly send him out of the game. That's the last guy that you want to see put out of the game. Your starting quarterback, who has been your starter and is one of the reasons why you're there. So they teach quarterbacks to go into a baseball-type slide, although I don't think they teach quarterbacks to go into a Ty Cobb baseball-type slide, which is with the cleats up in the air, ready to spike some guy. Now, I didn't see the play, so please forgive me. What I understand, though, is that it was a slide that had one of the cleated feet up in the air, in much the same way some baseball players go into slide into the bag. And they do that because they want to throw off the player covering the base, possibly get him to drop the ball to make contact. Now, I don't really know what's legal in baseball anymore. I know that Ty Cobb was famous for sharpening the cleats on his shoes, literally sharpening the spikes with a file to try to get him good and sharp so that when he stuck some guy in the thigh, the guy would bleed like bleed like anything. So in any event, here is Tom Brady. He's taking off. He's running in the ball game. Stills of this slide make it look like something out of a ninja movie, and luckily there were no injuries. Of course, had the cleat been on the other foot, ha-ha reads, the NFL and the refs might have brought down all sorts of penalties. Now it's just an internet moment and a spirited debate about Brady's tactics. Raven safety Bernard Pollard said, "You got to keep the legs down. You've got to keep your legs down. We all know and understand what's going on out there. As a quarterback, when you go to slide, we're taught we can't do anything. When you come sliding and your legs up in the air trying to kick somebody, that's bull crap. We talked to the ref. They saw it. You can't deny it." All right. Now, what happened was this. He did make contact with Ed Reed, and Reed went off limping. He came back into the game, so it was not a game-ending injury for Ed Reed. Ed Reed is a all-pro veteran safety for the Baltimore Ravens. Lose a player like that, you're losing a star player. Now, everybody is ready to attribute to Brady ill intent, meaning he went with the cleats up and he was ready to jam it right up some guy's, right in his face, and he was ready to take somebody's, you-know-what off, and he was just... I don't know that any of that's true. I do think that they probably ought to find the guy or at least take a look at it and institute some rule if they haven't already and say,
Yeah, I think they're the rule against trying to hurt people.
Well, what does that mean, trying to hurt people? Every time you tackle someone in football, aren't you trying to hurt them?
Not necessarily. You're trying to tackle them.
Yeah, but in football, you can't do anything to cripple a guy or nothing.
No, you can't do that. You're right. But I don't know what the rule is specifically about a quarterback when he goes into that slide with his legs, his feet up in the air, with that cleat up in the air. If he's down, he's going into the slide, he's basically making the statement, I'm intentionally downing the ball. I'm intentionally downing the ball. I am intentionally stopping the play here. Now, there are players that will jump on a quarterback or jump on a player like that to sort of, stop the slide, because it may mean another yard, 2 yards. On Monday, this defensive back, Bernard Pollard, wasn't backing off. When you slide, everything's on the ground. He knew what he was doing. I'm the type of player where it has to go both ways. It really does. It has to go both ways. Hopefully the NFL will do something about it. Anyway, here's what I wanted to say about this, and then I'm not going to belabor it. I don't think that Brady, one of the things that we're always ready to attribute the most nefarious reasons for things. We're always ready to say, well. Sometimes there's just an instinct that you have. Sometimes you go into a slide like that, and a guy is ready to pile on, three, four guys, and the instinct is to put your foot up in the air, maybe. I don't know. Or maybe his instinct was to stick his cleat up there and jam it in some guy's face, and it happened to be an instinct that did not necessarily, in his mind, married to the thought, what I'm doing here is illegal, I'm going to hurt somebody. I don't think you think that way necessarily. You're thinking, I'm playing football, I'm in a slide, some guy is about ready to either spear me, or maybe not spear, but, it's a legal tackle, but nonetheless, it's going to hurt. My foot's going up in the air. My cleat's going up in the air. But see, you know, we got such a culture of brain surgeons now. Everybody knows what everybody else is thinking. Oh, he knew what was going on. Yeah, fine. Find the guy, penalize the guy, do whatever you need to do to the guy. But don't tell me that every time something like this happens, see, Brady all of a sudden and the New England Patriots, because they're winners and because they go out and traditionally have won Super Bowls, and I understand that they the last few years they stunk it out. And I mean they've stunk it out. But the fact is they've won Super Bowls. They've got Super Bowls in the trophy case there in the headquarters of the New England Patriots. They've got about three more than some teams have. They got three more than the Atlanta Falcons have got. They got two more than the Baltimore Ravens have got. So they're an organization that people don't like for that very reason. They win, or they've won Super Bowls. And so they're automatically ready to demonize, and they're all ready to tear Tom Brady apart. You know that, don't you?
What do you mean?
I mean, Tom Brady has reached that point in his success, in his fame, in his run as a quarterback in the National Football League. They are now, he's now at that point that every icon in the history of American culture reaches. We are now ready to tear his ass apart, to rip him off of his pedestal. That's what we're ready to do. That's what we do with all of our heroes, and that's what we're now ready to do to Tom Brady. We're ready to kill him. I mean, figuratively.
Well, I think that's ridiculous. I think that Tom Brady has won. I don't know anything about football, but I'll tell you this. He's won a great many games. He's lost a lot of games. He's married to a very beautiful girl. Isn't she the model?
I don't know.
Well, who's he married to?
Yeah, he's married to like a movie or a movie model or something.
Well, like a modeling actress or something.
A movie model or a modeling actress? Well, I don't know what. But he's married to a model, right?
I think she's a model.
All right. So?
So what?
So, I just got done telling you he's married to a model. He has cachet. Like the man that you said you don't like all that much because he's married to a model. The man who plays the, I just was talking about it, hockey?
Wayne Gretzky?
Yes.
I never said I don't like him.
Well, what did you say about this?
I said I saw him one time and he had his wife with him and she's a model.
Well, you acted like you wanted to, I don't know, maybe you were in a bad mood that day, Phil, but you looked like you wanted to commit rape.
Will you watch what you're saying, please?
I'm sorry, but that's...
Well, Margaret, you can get sued for that.
Yeah, no kidding.
Are you trying to tell me you're going to sue me?
Watch what you're saying. I never said anything of the sort.
I said you looked that way.
Well, you must have some kind of a warped way of looking at people. I think when I told you about that, I was in some store and I saw Mr. Gretzky and I saw his wife, and that's all I said.
Well, then why did you look like you wanted to...
Don't say it.
Well, you... Assault.
Don't... It was a Christmas. It was a very busy store. And when I was telling you the story, I think I was telling you the story about how crowded the store was. Nothing to do with Gretzky and his wife. They were there. I was there. A whole bunch of people were there. And I happened to see him and his wife. But it was up Christmas time, I remember, and the place was packed.
Yeah, I think I remember the story now. You said that the Gretzky's is getting all kind of service, and it was pissing you off.
Yeah, I remember that now.
No, I didn't say it pissed me off. No, I did not.
Well, there was some problem you had that you wanted to resolve with some kind of a home invasion.
Well, you know what? You know what I had to do? I had to fire you right now for saying all that stuff, Margaret.
Well, that's what I thought. I could be wrong.
Oh, she could be wrong. I see Mr. and Mrs. Gretzky in a toy store at Christmas time. It's crowded, so I'm talking about how irritated I am. And Margaret says I wanted to solve the whole problem with a home invasion.
I didn't say their home.
Oh, I see. We'll be right back. Forget about Tom Brady. You know what, Brady? You're on your own. I could care less. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show. What home would you talk about?
The manager of Sharper Image.
Phil Henry. Famous Phil Henry Show.
Now hold on, Phil. Hold on.
What?
Bud?
All right. Hold on for a minute. Okay, Mr. Aaron?
Yes, I'm holding on.
All right. Wait a minute.
Get a minute.
What are you doing?
Wait a minute. I gotta get the I don't think we have him, Miss Gray.
Where's the thing that goes wah, wah, wah?
What do you mean, wah, wah, wah?
Looking for that horn.
We don't have the wah, wah, wah horn on there.
Hey, we got one over here. I thought we had taps.
What are you guys trying to do?
Well, just go ahead and make the announcement.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Henry reviews Lincoln, like he promised he was going to do 3 weeks ago.
Oh, get out. What do you mean, like I promised I was going to do?
You not said that on Twitter.
I know I said that on Twitter, so it doesn't mean I'm going to do it. Hey, look, let me tell you something about Twitter. Just because you say something on Twitter, it's not a binding contract, okay?
Yes, but your audience feels it is.
Oh, my audience understands. So, yeah, I finally, I'll review Lincoln, Linkbun. Is that his name?
Abraham, why don't you have some respect?
I've got respect. Abraham Lincoln, I'll review the movie for you now. Because I finally sat down and watched it. I hadn't even watched it, but I did watch it this weekend in San Francisco. And I'll tell you why I want to review it now as opposed to, you know, when it first came out. Everybody's running out to see Lincoln, and I know that the movie, it probably did pretty good. I know it's been nominated for a lot of Academy Awards. I don't personally think that it, you know what, I'll take this back. Sure, it deserves a Best Picture, but here's the thing. I happen to be a big Lincoln fan, and I've been reading biographies of Abraham Lincoln for years. Years and years and years and years. And I've been reading about the assassination for years and years and years and years. And about his life for years and years and years and years. And then I read a book of letters that he wrote. And I read that years and years and years and years ago.
So you're just a big Abraham Lincoln expert.
No, I'm not an expert. But I came into this whole Lincoln movie thing with probably more information about this guy, Abraham Lincoln. Now everybody knows who he is. And I saw my dear close personal friend, Christine Blackburn, tweet, I saw the Lincoln movie and I was bored. Does that make me a bad American? And I tweeted back to her, no, it makes you a typical American.
Oh, so because we're bored. Well, that's an insult.
Did you see it?
Yes, I did.
Were you bored?
I was not bored.
You know, don't even go there with me, okay?
Well.
Look. I can understand how the movie Lincoln would be boring to people that are not into history, the history of that period. But I got to tell you something. Let me just say this. Steven Spielberg has done genius things with historical. First, I think Steven Spielberg is the greatest director in the history of motion pictures.
You do?
I think he's the greatest director in the history of motion pictures. There's no way you can deny it. There's no way that you can come close to matching what this man has done. And if you tell me that, oh, well, he had all this technology at his disposal, there isn't a director out there that didn't use all of the technology at their disposal. I'm not talking about the fact that he had better technology. I'm saying that he did what any director would do. And I'm saying that Steven Spielberg, in his hands, comedy, fantasy, science fiction, history, drama, all of it has been done brilliantly. He's used black and white photography. He's used color photography. He's done it all, man. He's used animatronics. He's used CGI. He's not used any of it. And he has, in my opinion, he's done better than he is the greatest of the greats.
Are you saying that Steven Spielberg is better than
All right, Mark.
No, hold on. Is he better than,
what about one of the old-time ones?
That's what I'm thinking of. The,
Fatty Arbuckle.
What about Fatty Arbuckle?
Fatty Arbuckle.
D.W. Griffith.
Of course.
Oh, look at you. Of course.
Are you trying to tell me Spielberg? D.W. Griffith? Why would he?
D.W. Griffith. Mr. Henry, he did a Civil War film without special effects, with all of those extras, with those long shots.
He did a Civil War film, yes. And it was a great one, even though it was for the time. I mean, it was an ignorant piece of history, given his propensity in that film to glamorize the Ku Klux Klan. Nonetheless, D.W. Griffith's movie was a great film for that time. But I'm talking about body of work. Are you trying to tell me it comes anywhere near Spielberg? Forget it. So here's what I'm saying. Having said that, there are we have the example of Saving Private Ryan, and we have the example of Schindler's List as a couple of films that had good, clean, narratives. They had that's the only way a layman like me can describe it. The narrative, the story, it was lean, it was clean. You knew what we were talking about here, baby. You know, what are we talking? Here's what we're talking about. Here's what we're talking about. We're talking about saving these people here. They're Jewish. They're in a concentration camp. Let's get them the hell out. Let's go. And yes, there's this guy. What's the guy? Well, the guy is a rich guy, and the rich guy suddenly wants to save these Jewish people. Bang. It's not a tough story to tell. It's a very compelling story. It's a fantastic story. There's heroes. There's villains. It's true. It's brilliant. And Spielberg told it brilliantly. He even threw in the black and white imagery to give us that sense. Oh, yeah, that's right. That was the darkness of the period, you know. Saving Private Ryan. What's it about? Some guys in the war. They're going to go get this guy. They're going to fight the Nazis. Boom. There are Americans. There's Germans. Good, bad. There you go. Now you take Spielberg at, I think, his more disjointed. And that's Amistad. And I have to say, this film, Lincoln. I'm not saying they're bad films. I like Lincoln infinitely better than Amistad. I mean, light years ahead of that. But in those movies, I'm sitting and I'm going, wait a minute, what are we talking about here?
Well, he was talking about Abraham Lincoln, Phil, and the amendment to free the slaves.
I understand that. But you see, that's a legislative push. That's a legislative, that was a push by Abraham Lincoln to get this piece of legislation through, even though it was the 13th Amendment, even though it was to outlaw slavery, even though it was a momentous thing, it was the very dry business of gathering votes. And at one point, I looked at this and I thought, is this really a movie about just getting votes together? Now, people are going to say to me, Henry, don't you recognize Lincoln's brilliant character as it was his influence over all of these events? Look, I know full well what Lincoln's influence was over all of those events, and I'm telling you right now that I do not believe that Mr. Spielberg, as brilliant as he is, I don't think he captured it all that well in this movie. I'm not saying he did a bad job. I just don't know really what it was that I don't know the story he was trying to tell.
But he's trying to tell about Abraham Lincoln, then he got shot.
No kidding. He's trying to tell about Abraham Lincoln, and then he got shot.
Well, yeah.
And that's the other thing. You don't even need to throw in the assassination. I mean, if it's about... So, all right. It sounds like I don't like the movie. I do. I liked the movie. But I love the story of Lincoln, and I love Daniel Day-Lewis. How can I not want to love that movie? And I did. And Daniel Day-Lewis was outstanding. Outstanding. If you want to talk about great performances, this had... loads of them. I'm not talking about the performances here, folks. Please understand. I'm not even talking about the director. I'm saying for this guy here, for Phil Henry, it's a little hard for me to figure out exactly.
Well, he was telling about the 13th Amendment.
I know that. But really? He was talking about Lincoln and the 13th Amendment. He was talking about a chapter in the life of Abraham Lincoln. You know, Abraham Lincoln, while he believed in the freedom of men, he believed in the Emancipation Proclamation, he believed in freeing the slaves, at the heart and soul of all of it was saving the country, saving the Union. He believed that the best way for the Union to go forward was to get rid of slavery, because the country was not going to survive, as he said, half slave, half free. Okay, so it wasn't that he didn't believe in the freedom of the human being on this planet. It wasn't that he didn't believe in the freedom of the slaves. It wasn't that he didn't believe in any of that. But at the heart and at the soul of all of that was the belief that this is the way to save the country. You know, and so what Abraham Lincoln was about at the end of the day was America, the country. And Spielberg got that a little out of whack because it kept being about slavery. Yes, of course it's about slavery.
Are you trying to say that Steven Spielberg... So in other words, you think slavery is not as important?
No, I didn't say that.
Well, Steven Spielberg is the best director ever. You said that.
I know I said that. So what am I saying that you guys don't get?
Well, you're saying that he's too liberal with the slavery thing.
No, I didn't say that at all. No, I didn't. What I'm saying is simply this. I don't think he captured, number one, I don't think he captured truly what Abraham Lincoln's passion was. That's number one. And I think it did not have that good storytelling, it did not have the good story to tell that he had in Schindler's List and that he had in Saving Private Ryan. I'll give you an example here. Sally Fields is the greatest. I love her. And she was fantastic as Mary Lincoln. But what was with this big, long dialogue she had with Thaddeus Stevens, you know, the Tommy Lee Jones character? This big, long dialogue with him at this party. Now, I'm sure it had a lot to do with her character and his character and how she perceived how he was treating her husband and what he thought. But it was a static piece of it was two people standing there talking at each other. I didn't like it.
You're talking about Sally Fields, who was the fly, and I'm not saying the flying nun was all that. I'm just saying she was the, Phil, when you were riding your little bicycle around Arcadia, she was on a television show for ABC.
She's on a flying nun?
Yes. So?
What do you mean, so? While you were riding your little bike around Arcadia, she was on the flying nun.
Great, that's...
Well, I mean, you would put that down.
I'm not putting it down. There's Margaret sitting there going, she was on the flying... she did a lot of stuff. Norma Rae, she won the Academy Award.
That's right, Norma Rae.
Okay. I'm not saying she's a bad actress. I think she's tremendous. I love her. And I always will. And I'll always go watch Sally Fields in a movie. She's great. She's great. She's great. I'm not complaining about her. I think the film itself lacked a story that I could just wrap my arms around and follow, man. I mean, I was just... It was about... Mr. Lincoln with his children, and then I saw him interacting with the cabinet. I saw his passion for the amendment, and that was a great moment when he got up and he said, "I'm the President of the United States, clothed in immense power." He wanted this thing passed. He was very, very calm with people. He was Daniel Day-Lewis. If it wasn't for him, the movie would have stunk to high heaven, in my opinion. Let me just put it to you that way. That's the best way I can put it. If it wasn't for Daniel Day-Lewis, it would have been a rotten movie.
Well, now you say it. Now you finally got it said. Steven Spielberg isn't a great director.
I didn't say that. I
think I did, Miss Henry.
No, I didn't. No. No, I didn't.
Yes, you did.
No, I didn't say that.
Yes, you did.
No, I didn't.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I... All right, we're going to be right back.
Gotcha.
Yeah, we'll be right back. The world-famous Phil Henry Show with more of this jackassery.
Truth
yes,
is our
you
bitch.
Did.
The no, Phil Hendry Show. You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Just a couple of more sports notes here. Tim Tebow was, quote, forced on Woody Johnson and team president Neil Glatt. That is a report by CBS of New York that Tim Tebow, as you know, the darling of the sports celebrity media of the 2011 season, with his great play with his inspiring play, I should say, with the Denver Broncos. And some people were even fooled into thinking that, you know, Tim Tebow was some kind of really great quarterback. Now, I'm not saying that to insult Mr. Tebow, but there comes a time when you got to know something about football. And Tim Tebow was not a, quote, great quarterback. Now, that's nothing against that kid. He did a hell of a lot with what he had, with what the good Lord gave him, you know, if you want to get religious about it. And he did. And yes, he was Christian, and yes, he prayed. I don't know what that, you know, I see guys praying all the time. I don't know whether that's a big issue with him, but hey, I see cats praying and crossing themselves and worshiping God and Allah and every other God that there is every time they score a touchdown. With this guy, it's weird. I don't get it. But the fact is, Tim Tebow was not a great quarterback. He was inspiring, and he you know, might have thrown a few defenses off. But nonetheless, that was that. Now, he gets traded to the New York Jets. Now, here's the thing. Here's where I really got a problem. This guy that owns the team, Woody Johnson, I don't know who the hell he is. I'm sure he's just a marvelous guy. He's got money. This guy is quoted as saying that Tebow was forced on him. The former first-round pick was forced on him, and team president Neil Glatt says team owner Woody Johnson to ESPN. And they're laying some of the blame, I believe they're laying some of the blame on, well, the player personnel staff of the New York Jets, nobody in particular. Now, one of the guys that outed this situation was a former Denver Bronco executive, Ted Sundquist, who interviewed with the Jets for their vacant general manager position. He's the guy that also said that Woody Johnson said that Tebow was forced on him and President Neil Glatt. Maybe Sundquist doesn't want or didn't want the job with the Jets, because that's a hell of a thing to come running your mouth about.
Well, I would say so. So he interviewed for the job, and then he's starting to blather what he heard in the interview.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. So anyway, when Tebow was acquired by the New York Jets on March 21st, writers and fans alike speculated that it was a publicity stunt to capture headlines and sell merchandise. That speculation continued throughout the season as Tebow never became a factor. Well, let's just be clear for a minute. You writers and you fans, you thought he was just all that too. So don't give me this bull crap like you speculated anything. You know, there was a whole slew of people that thought Tebow was the real deal. No, he wasn't. Now, you know, again, this is not about Tim Tebow, but I got to tell you, this owner, this Woody Johnson, what a thing to say. What a thing to admit to saying. You might have said it. You might have talked about it. But to be the owner of a football team and to say that anything is forced on you, you got to be some kind of a real limp you-know-what, man.
Yeah, I know what you were going to say.
Take it easy. I mean, that's not even close to, you know, standing up like a man and say, I own the football team. I'm the guy that signs the checks. Here's why Tim Tebow's here, because I signed off on it. There's all kinds of guys. Johnson's alleged comments allude to the fact that it was general manager Mike Tannenbaum who wanted Tebow in the fold. Tannenbaum was fired by Johnson the day after New York's season-ending defeat to the Buffalo Bills. Johnson consistently spoke of Tebow being forced on the organization or drawing attention to the roster. I think you can never have too much Tebow, Johnson famously told CNBC last August, though. Less than 2 months later on the same network, Johnson said the New York would absolutely keep the quarterback through 2014, the final year of his contract. Used primarily as a personal punt protector on special teams, Tebow threw just 8 passes. Now all of a sudden this guy is saying that he was forced on the team. The New York Jets have got problems. Everybody knows this. But to say that the problem has to do with players, you know, to say that the problem is Mark Sanchez, the first problem that the New York Jets have got, in my opinion, and it's only my opinion, but I happen to think I'm right, is that coach they got. That guy's a bum. I said it last year. I said it this year. They just signed him again. Now everybody's saying, well, why did they keep this guy? Rex Ryan's a bum. Okay? You want to know who ruined Mark Sanchez as a quarterback? This guy. Mark Sanchez is a good quarterback. I know. I saw him play quarterback in college. He's a good quarterback. He could be a great, if not, you know, a great, he could be a good pro quarterback. Rex Ryan is not the kind of coach that inspires any kind of confidence in any of his players. He doesn't, to me, he doesn't act like a head coach. I think he's got he borrows a little bit from his dad and maybe some stuff that he saw some other kind of hard-ass coaches do. And then he knows a little bit about the X's and O's. And then he gets up into the face. He does that stupid thing. And none of it works. And on top of everything else, he lets his players just twist in the breeze. They just hang out. He hangs them out to dry, basically saying it's all their fault. Mark Sanchez can be a good quarterback with a good coach. This bum isn't it. Now you start with Rex Ryan. Now take a look at the team, that the guys that own the ball club.
Thank God, Phil, that we're not in New York. You'd be talking about this all the time.
Yeah, I'm in Los Angeles. We don't have professional football here, so you'll pardon me if I talk a little bit about it, okay?
Yeah, fine with me. I don't know anything about it.
Look at this. I'm like a man. I'm in the desert here. I'm just trying to talk some football. I got nobody to talk football to.
Nobody! You talk football to me, Mr. Henry.
But you don't know what I'm talking about.
Nope.
Well, in any event, it's the beginning of another week. Thank God it's a, well, it's a short one. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show, produced by Dan Northcraft and me, Phil Hendry.
Why do you put Dan's name first?
I don't know. Just because I'm a nice guy. Join us online at philhendryshow.com with a backstage pass. A backstage pass, of course, gets you all of that cool stuff we were talking about, which is 5,000 hours of audio, as well as our archives, you know, as well as our daily podcast, as well as just about everything else under the sun that you could possibly imagine. Until tonight at 10, let that be a lesson to you.
Phil Hendry.